This is Sean with Voices Live On and Voices of St. Joan of Arc, and I'm speaking to the Father Guy Roberts, and that's essentially how this whole thing started, is me getting connected with you. How are you, Father?
Doing well, Sean.
So just to give a quick little backstory, Dr. Leo McCarthy was one of the people that helped finance the organ. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And Leo was one of our clients that had us interview 47 people around the country, including priests, about him, and one of them was you.
Yes.
And after our interview about Leo and what he'd done in blood pathology, we started talking about how this could be a really cool thing for the 100-year anniversary and even a possible fundraiser for the families.
Yes.
So we've gotten accomplished between 60 and 70 so far out of the 100. And one of the first ones was Carl Henn. And that was just a few weeks before he passed. And I've heard from multiple people how happy they were. They were able to hear him and capture his. And it's kind of shows proof in the pudding of the whole model. And that's one that I hope you're going to be able to listen to. But how have you heard a response from the other people, and as far as them listening to these, you know, favorite memories of the church and the personal connections?
Well, so far I haven't heard from a lot of people about their reactions. I've been sort of out of pocket with my mother's passing, and Carl had passed just shortly before my mother. And Carl was one of the favorites here at Joan of Arc because he was around for so long and had, it was the same age as the parish, so we were all hoping that he could make it to the centennial, but as far as I'm concerned, he made it. He made it into the year 2021, so we'll just round it up for him. And he'll be our master of ceremonies for French Market this year from his place in heaven.
And he the very last thing he said on the recording was laughing, and I thought it was pretty beautiful. He was,
oh yeah,
he was pretty great. And, you know, something that if we would have been able to interview him on his whole life, obviously people could hear that, but I think that, you know, people know enough what he's done, and especially the book, 50 Years of St. Joan of Arc,
exactly.
Is pretty great. Now, you also wrote a book, is that right?
On the Heart of the New Evangelization. Did that while I was on sabbatical back in 2015.
Okay. And what was kind of the overview focus with that?
Well, in my time as a Lutheran, before I became Catholic, obviously, I was preparing to be a church planter and an evangelist for them, and did some of that work for the Lutherans, and as I became Catholic, was trying to incorporate more and more of that into my Catholic priesthood, and finally had the opportunity to go on sabbatical and really research what the popes had written about the new evangelization since the 1960s, and put that into a format that could be used in the parish. So the first draft is just a workbook, more or less, to see how it would be received here at the parish level.
Okay. Now, what was your motivation to go from Lutheran to Catholic, and what were some of the, I guess, pieces of the puzzle that drew you in?
I've always been a historian and one that really liked to research the roots of everything, and I just wanted to go back to what I consider the original Church of Jesus Christ. And in my studies in theology, the more I would read about church history and the beautiful theology of the Eucharist and the Catholic teachings, I just couldn't deny the fact that I needed to become Catholic.
Okay. So what about the Catholic Church and about faith in general drives you, like, every day to do your job and to help others? What really, you know, motivates you?
Well, as I look at people's lives and just in general in the world, and especially the people that I deal with as a pastor day by day, people are by and large lost and looking for that purpose of life, and the world can be pretty cruel and mean, and life can seem pretty empty and purposeless if we don't know God. He's our source and our summit. So teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ helps people to realize their true dignity and their higher calling, and helps them to navigate life and to make this temporary life a little better until we get to go home to our Heavenly Father.
Okay. So just to give everybody a little bit of the background, where were you born, and do you have any brothers and sisters, and what were your parents' names?
Yeah, I have one brother, Gerald. He's almost 4 years younger, and my father, Guy, and my mother, Barbara just passed. And I was born here in Methodist Hospital, but grew up out in Hendricks County to the west.
And where'd you go to high school?
Went to Brownsburg High School when there wasn't much out there.
Well,
very small graduating class. class of 85.
Okay. And then where did you go to college or seminary?
Went to Butler University for my undergraduate and started out in forestry management. They had a deal with Duke University at the time where you go 3 years to Butler and 2 years to Duke for a Master of Forestry Science.
Wow.
But once I got involved in it, I just said I don't like the study of the sciences. They were making creation too clinical, and so I just felt like the Creator was saying, if you like creation, come and do my work. So then I went on to the Lutheran Seminary. I started at Fort Wayne. I was there for a little short while, and then transferred to St. Louis, Missouri, Concordia. Finished there, and instead of getting ordained, I knew it was time to become Catholic, and so I was picked up by the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, of all places, out in New Mexico, and they asked me to do the third and fourth year of the Master of Divinity over again, and I did that at Mount St. Mary's in Emmitsburg, Maryland.
Wow. Now, you also have a hobby that's rather unique, and it's, is it Taekwondo, is that right?
I teach Taekwondo and Tai Chi.
Wow.
I teach the Tai Chi to the adults, and the Taekwondo and the after-school program with our kids, so I'm a fifth degree black belt and slowly working towards sixth level. And I've got right now about 18 children this year that are in the program. I've had over the years, I've been teaching that here for about 14 years in the parish. And some years I've had as many as 30 children in the program on a particular year. So it's been very rewarding to get to know the children on that level outside of just church or being a priest, and allows them to get to know me differently than they would otherwise.
Now, when you practice that, that's obviously a very mental game, as you know, and partially obviously physical. What about the structure of Tai Chi or Taekwondo and religion overlap in how you focus and why it motivates you and how it keeps you grounded? Or just talk about that for a little bit.
Well, anything that God has made has a proper way, and that's sort of the way of creation itself, the way that God intends. So there is a moral aspect to the martial arts as well, because you're learning skills that not only can prepare your body for excellent health and teach you how your own body moves and how it cannot move, but it teaches you skills that can be very harmful or deadly. So you have to have a good moral spiritual development to use those skills properly, and not to harm others, but to try to avoid conflict. And it teaches you really to master your own emotions, and if you can be in charge of your own emotions and your feelings, then you can conquer a lot of things. But it just is like anything else in life. According to God's plan, you don't progress unless you do things in a particular way, and there's a right way and a wrong way. And martial arts really reinforces that, what we teach on the spiritual level in the church, that there's a right way and there's a wrong way, and if you do it wrong, you're not going to progress. If you do the right thing, then you'll advance and continue to I would say my martial arts at this point for me is I would describe it as very spiritual.
That's what I would think, especially. And how many years have you been practicing?
I've been practicing with my master, Grandmaster Park, in Taekwondo now for about 16 years, and in Tai Chi for about 12. And I started Taekwondo actually when I was a little boy, but then was in a very bad accident and busted up pretty badly, and spent about a year in recovery before I could do anything physical again. So I was away from it for a number of years and started to get back into it here and there as an adult.
So it sounds like timelines are rather close from when you started, as well as far as more recent years, and when you started with Joan of Arc, which is this your 15th year with St. Joan of Arc?
That's correct. 15 years at Joan of Arc.
Okay. And how did you get connected with the church?
Well, I was ordained out in Santa Fe, New Mexico, worked out there for a number of years, and then asked if I could transfer back to Indiana because my family's all back here. And so Archbishop Beekline, who was still living then, invited me to come back. And I spent it my first year here until they could get to know me. They don't put you as a pastor until they know your character. And they allowed me to work at St. Luke here on the north side for a year. I was in residence and doing some chaplaincy work at University of Indianapolis as well, serving actually on Sundays the parish of St. Anthony on the west side. But I was technically assigned to St. Luke. And after almost a year, I was assigned here to St. Joan of Arc.
So the first day you walked in, what was that feeling like? And what things did you focus on? And You know, what was that whole experience the first time you walked into the church?
Well, just overwhelmed with the optics of this beautiful big church and the height of the bell tower, and just the feeling of the reverence that this place deserved because of its age and its history, and such an important parish here on the north side of Indianapolis, and had produced so many notable public figures over the years that are known not only in Indianapolis but outside of our community as well. And of course, the school here, I was very excited about having a parish again with a school. I had had one out in Raton, New Mexico, on the Colorado border, so I was anxious to get back to a parish with a school. And I saw a lot of potential here. Also saw a lot of challenges because the Joan of Arc community is diverse in many ways. There's not just racial diversity, especially in the school, but we've got the socioeconomic, the different age groups. We've become, in particular, a very young parish. I do lots and lots of baptisms. Practically every Sunday afternoon I have baptisms, and lots of weddings each year. And thankfully, not as many funerals as a lot of parishes. So we've become a very young parish, and of course that brings with it its challenges, because we have people, even within their Catholicism, that are across the spectrum from what we would consider liberal to conservative and in between. So it's been a challenge to really figure out what is it that is the one thing that everybody has in common here at Joan of Arc. And by and large, that has been the church building itself, and the feeling that anybody can belong here because we're not one thing or another, but people are drawn here by the spirituality, the teaching, the openness of the community, and the beautiful church, which, of course, we just were able to restore in preparation for a centennial.
If you could speak to that a little bit, that's quite a project, and I know it's a large dollar amount that had to be attained to be able to make it happen. So
yeah.
What were some of the highlights of things that were renovated through that process, and what was the total dollar needed to make it happen?
Well, at the beginning, we put a little commission together, and I told them, just dream big, and we'll come up with a number that we'll whittle down later, but let's put on a list anything that we think we need to do for the restoration. And we came up with a total of $8 million, what it was going to cost.
Wow.
And, of course, those who were advising us in the campaign, we had to cut that down considerably. And realistically, we came up with a $5 million price tag, which is pretty ambitious, but you know the people here rallied and they pulled together, and even those who were advising us said it's doubtful you're going to get there, and we actually made it, and made it by, with a little bit left over. If all the pledges actually do come in, we will go over just slightly the $5 million. But one of the things we wanted to do was to air condition the church, because it would just get brutal there in the summers, and the beautiful paintings, the murals, and the stained glass, and the oil paintings, and even the old organ were just being ravaged by the effects of the humidity in the summer, and then in the winter time the heat wasn't good. It would get very cold in there, so we were able to put in new HVAC system and keep the temperature constant throughout the year, and not have to open the windows and let the humidity and the weather in. So that in itself was an important thing. If we were going to repair the artwork and paint from the ceiling down and just restore that beautiful building. I think the second biggest thing that people notice most is they come in, they look up immediately because the church just draws you to look up, and then they see all how fresh and new it looks. But then they look down at their feet, and it's a beautiful new terrazzo floor that the founders wanted to put terrazzo in back in the 1920s, and they just ran out of money, so they had to put down the old asbestos tile. And that was starting to pick up and leave on its own here in recent years, and was becoming a trip hazard, and it was just so dirty and ugly, and couldn't be polished anymore. There was no surface left on it, so that was removed, and the beautiful new terrazzo floor was put in. So I feel very honored to have been pastor during that time of a renewal, a restoration, and not just passing on a tired old has-been, but bringing new life to it, and being able to have something proud to hand on to the next generation.
Something I thought that was very interesting when you took me on the original tour, down the middle aisle, if you could kind of explain that and the significance of that.
Yeah, we have this long aisle at Joan of Arc, and we're always in this healthy competition with St. John downtown about who has the longest aisle in their church, because we both have a lot of weddings. And so we had this long aisle, and I got to thinking about the pattern that should be in the aisle instead of it just being plain. And I thought about how that length reminded me sort of the blade of a sword. And we were already planning up at the front of the aisle to have the symbol of Joan of Arc, which is the fleur-de-lis. And I started thinking, that sort of resembles the handle of a sword, if you use your imagination. And Joan of Arc had carried a sword into battle. She never wielded it as a weapon, but it had been revealed to her in a vision that there was a sword behind an altar at this old church where she used to pray. It had been an old crusader's sword. And in the vision, after she came out of the vision, she went and looked, and yes, there was a sword there. And it had five crosses going down the blade, which was typical of the old crosses, because whenever the soldier would fall in battle, the soldier, of course, would be Christian, they could stick that sword in the ground, and the hilt would form the cross to mark their place of death. But the five crosses represent the five wounds of Jesus. We find that a lot on altars, in the four corners and one in the middle. But the blade of Joan of Arc had the five crosses, the five wounds of Jesus going down the blade. So now that's a symbol right here in our Joan of Arc church.
That's beautiful. So what are some of the future ideas? It seems like a lot of things are already kind of set in place, but is there anything for 2021 or the near or even distant future that you would like to see as new project or new mission with groups or new type of faith, as far as, you know, what people would like to focus on with? What would be just some ideas of things that could be coming down the road?
Well, we've been several years now in the Centennial Restoration, and our time has been taken up with the restoration of the building, the church building. We've done several projects over the years fixing up the school building. In fact, we weren't planning on it, but because they were falling into the building, we had to raise money and put new windows in the school this past year as well. And I'm going to be transitioning out most likely this summer. A new pastor will be coming, but I guess my vision for Joan of Arc, once we get past the celebration of our centennial, is we've done so much work on the physical structure. I really want this community to start thinking about its mission in Christ and the good it can do for the community around us. There's always need in communities, especially in the city, and I would like our parishioners to continue to grow in their knowledge of the faith, learning the gospel of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, and how to put those into practice. So I would, if I were going to stay, that would be my goal, is to start helping the people to practice more intentional discipleship and put the mission into practice, especially through the school and forming our young people, but also through the parish, the church side as well, and just recognizing that we have been turned inward for a lot of years now to fix ourselves up, and now we need to look outward a little bit.
So is there, just as far as an overall message to the parishioners, as well as if you'd like to say, you know, any appreciation to anybody individually, which I know you could say that to everybody and you don't want to have to call certain people out, not other people out, but what would you just like to say in general to the parish?
Well, I am very proud to have been part of the history of this marvelous parish and its great history, and as well as part of its future. And what makes it incredible now and over the years that it's been here has been the people who've made it up. And the people of Joan of Arc never fail to come through. We kind of laugh about ourselves. We're a last-minute people, but we always come through in the 11th hour and 59th minute somehow, and we make good things happen. So I would just say the people here have my gratitude, and because there's nothing that I could have said, hey, we're gonna do this. If they weren't on board with it, it wouldn't have happened. I've just been amazed to watch the people come together, even though it's such a diverse community, and everybody's kind of here for their own personal reasons. There are certain things that do pull us together as one, and so I just am amazed time and again that the community rallies and comes together and supports itself and is excited about doing the work of the Lord.
Well, I'm thankful that you were open enough to let my company, Voices Live On, be able to help save the stories of the church, and we look forward to being able to save the life stories of the parishioners, and also appreciation of multiple people in the family for them as well. And it's been a joy for me to be able to learn a lot of different perspectives from people that have done a lot with the church, and every single one of them says a lot of great things about what you've done. So I know that you've made a very impact just from what I've heard from everybody, let alone probably from what you hear any day of the week of somebody coming up and thanking you. So if there's any, would you like to add anything else?
No, just thank you to you, and I think this has been providential that our paths crossed when they did, and I think the Lord is using you to help preserve the stories of this great parish. So thank you, Sean.
Well, this has become a life mission, so we're ready to help. And Father Roberts, I really appreciate your time, and I'm going to close this one out.
All right. God bless you.
God bless you.